Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get, well, not that good at it. You could do about half of your New Year's resolutions. You could, I don't know, join a CrossFit gym or something like that. Or you can start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. So, man, if you're out there and you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your own home. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work all from the comfort of your couch. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral spray and serum treatments to find out which one works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there is no uncomfortable doctor visits. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if a treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/drinkingbros. That's Hims.com/drinkingbros for your personalized hair loss options. Hims.com/drinking bros.
Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. Put down the water and grab a fucking drink.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Ross, what are you doing over there?
Matt, you know what? I can smell like hero tonight. I can smell like hero through the phone. Is there a hero over there?
We have there. A special podcast tonight, you know? We have... We're missing Rocco and JT, but we have Mr. Evan Hafer.
Right,
and,
right. But wait,
the,
Matt,
the
Matt.
Man him
Yeah, Evan is not the guy I smell. Like, I smell a real hero over there. Is there a fucking hero over there?
Right. Yeah. Fuck Evan.
Yep. Absolutely.
We have the one and only Klimp. Clint Ramachet today.
Been called way worse.
Oh,
whiskey drinking brother.
We got a big hero on the show tonight.
Yep.
Wow.
I mean, you know.
At all of 5'5".
He fills my heart full of love.
He fills a lot of hearts full of love, is what he does. Welcome, Clint. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Good to be here.
Last time I talked to you was during the movie, during Range 15. You were one of the stars of our little flick.
Range.
I was. It was a pretty freaking epic time down there recording our Range 15 and drinking beer and having some fun with the guys.
You're goddamn right it was. People still quote your line all the time.
It was fucking debaucherous. That's the good part of it.
Well, I mean, I was impressed no one got arrested or disappointed in the same fashion.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed. We almost had an arrest on set, but we did not. So I feel like, Evan, you should have fell on that one. You should have got arrested.
Well, I almost did. They had me at gunpoint. They had me held down. They went through all my pockets.
That's true. I forgot
and
about that.
they were actually getting ready to arrest me as a terrorist because I was driving around in a Humvee with a turret, and the cops came in because there was a bunch of shooting. Ross Patterson. I'm not going to say who, but
Ross Patterson.
Was it Ross Patterson who shot? It was Ross Patterson.
Yeah.
And so they rolled me up. And it was pretty interesting because, you know, I got this pocket knife in my pocket most of the time. And these fucking
dudes, we all do. You're not allowed to have anything sharp
They about fucking executed me right there on the street. They were just going to line me up. They're like, this is a 4-inch blade. we have a full execution law here in California for 4-inch blades. And then I was like, wait, I know Matt best. And then they're like, whoa, 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 hold
bullshit.
On.
No, they
hold
said
the fuck
who?
On.
They said who? They didn't even know who I was. They're like, Art 15 Clothing, Black Rock. Never heard of it.
Never heard fuck. Of him.
He only uses fuck. One T.
Yeah.
The beauty of it is, Evan, you always carry a 4-inch blade on you at all times. So that's
yeah, his dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you call,
like
your
a laser pointer.
You call your penis. You call your penis the 4-inch blade.
Laser pointer. That laser pointer. But I call it blade just for short because I'm a huge fan of Snipes.
Yeah, right. you're a big fan of the Blade Trinity.
You put it in dudes' mouths, but never in their eyes. It's rude to put a laser in their eyes, but
absolutely.
The mouth is okay.
And only at dark. It's only at dark. Only after dark.
Hell yeah, Ross. I'm excited. We're hanging out. Clint came in town today, and it was like, let's have a podcast and get people to know Clint. If you don't already know him, then go fuck yourself. And then Evan's covering down because JT had to go do business. Rocco's doing business. The crew is busy, but we're here to have a foursome. We're going to do some fucking sponsors, and we're going to butt fuck this episode. You know?
Yeah. We are. We've got Clint on. We've got a Medal of Honor recipient here. For those of you at home who don't know, that's more important than Kevin Costner's position in The Bodyguard.
Well, hold on, Ross. Clint and I were talking about this earlier. I mean, I do have an Archon with V device, and his Medal of Honor does not have a V device. So, I mean, well, I'm almost there, Clint.
You want to treat him like Rosa Parks? Tell me if she gets to the back of the bus. Go ahead.
No, not at all, man. Clint, if you read his story, and we'll talk about his new book too, he's a fucking stud. And I know it's hard for a dude in his position to admit that, but if you read what went down, all that stuff, he's a fucking stud. He's a team player. He's a whiskey drinking badass. So we consider him more than Frenny's family. So we're happy to have you on, dude.
Fantastic. Well, Clint, how this show works is remarkably, we've got some sponsors who sponsor this thing to be live across the airwaves. The first one is Sofleet. You can say Sofleet. You can say Sofleet. You can be a little tiny athlete, or you can be a Sofleet. Evan Hafer, what is Sofleet? Why don't you get and tell the listeners?
Oh, Sofleet. So Sofleet is both programming and supplements for those who are preparing for a special operations selection and or that just want to prepare to be badasses in general. So they
functional
do
functional training is the way I
it
look
is,
at that program.
It is. It's like it's like not, a legitimate CrossFit.
It's like not CrossFit. We're trying to be the best at exercising. Where you're like, this is applicable physical skills that you could actually directly associate to being like a dynamic individual.
Sounds
good though.
Hey, if you're going to get pounded in the surf, if you're going to get pounded in the surf with a bunch of dudes, you're going to go train to be a SEAL and you're going to use that with Sofleet programming.
You can't make fun of sponsors because you're great friends with the owner, Evan.
I love Sofleet. We've got a ton of their supplements here in the office. Brent is an amazing American. Fantastic force, not force to come, Marsoc Marine. And they've got great programming and great supplements. Amazing guys.
Yeah, and it's SOFLETE.com. You can go through for all their amazing supplements, all their workout programs. If you want to be as big as Matt Best, why don't you go ahead and download some of their workout programs and get loose. Oh, we got one of my newest faves to the show. I'm talking about broque.co. That's broque.co. What do they have? They've got gifts for dudes. I know what you're thinking. What do I get my dad for his birthday? What do I get him for Christmas? What do I give him for Thanksgiving? What do I give my friends when they have kids? Like, I don't know, because I'm a dude. What does a dude get another dude? It's a weird conversation topic to bring up. Go to broque.co and get some of the coolest shit they have on the planet. You can get wooden crates full of shaving supplies, fucking hot sauces. They've got a little conceal and carry drink concoction kits. They've got some stuff to make some Moscow mules on here. They've got trail mix. They got stuff for your mustaches. They've got literally crates of stuff that will make your mustache stand up. You're hearing me correct on this. That's broque.co. That's broque.co. It's not a com, it's a co. So look, even if you're trying to, maybe tell that special someone in your life, hey, I'd like to take this to another level. What? Oh, you might be gay, but you don't want to come out and say that first. You want to give him a gift box first. This is the place to get your gift box. If you're a new dad, if you're a father, if you want to try a dick for the first time, or you want to send your dad something, or a brother, or a cousin, or that weird uncle who gives you some cash sometimes at Thanksgiving to do some unmentionables underneath the dinner table, yeah. Go to broquet.co. That's broquet.co. Type in the promo code Drinking Bros. And you can get the manliest gifts that has ever been given to another man without being, you know, coy about it. And next up, you know him.
Limber.
I'm all hopped up on him. It's a little Strike Force. We're calling in the Strike Force. A little Strike Force.
I didn't know that Strike Force.
It's the tastiest little energy drink. Get in a tin pouch. Kick the can. You don't need a can anymore. You don't need Monster. You don't need Red Bull. You don't need anything. All you need is this little tiny tin pouch. It goes in waters, juices, beers, liqueurs, any type of liquid you can think of. You can also take it rectally. Fun fact, did it over the weekend. I had the best. I ran the best 4K of my life on it when I took it rectally.
Listen, hey, you soak a tampon full of fucking Strike Force, insert it for, you know, 13 to 14 minutes. You're running 4Ks like they're going out of style. I mean,
yeah. I took it. A buddy of mine took some in a tampon. Gay guy. He went to a gay club. He said he danced for 9 hours straight and found the man of his dreams on it. And that's also an option. You know what I'm saying? So
this episode is how not to promote sponsors. Yeah.
Straight or gay, Strike Force Energy gets you where you need to be. It gets you high on life. It can make you run faster. It can make you dance harder. Go to StrikeForceEnergy.com.
You put it in your ass, dicks.
you can do whatever you want with your dicks. You can go to StrikeForceEnergy.com, type in the promo code Drinking Bros. You get 20% off of every order. They have a subscription and they ship anywhere in the entire world. Clint, where were you deployed once?
You know, I did some time overseas in Iraq, Afghanistan, Kosovo, Korea, Germany. Just a few.
Yeah.
Just a couple.
Fun fact, Clint, I got an email from a boy in Korea who had ordered some Strike Force. He was rolling rice patties out in the street. He said he was making handmade sushi for his father. His little fingers were tired. He was exhausted all goddamn day. He ordered some Strike Force. They shipped it right to his fucking hut. His fun fact, his dad is now the top sushi salesman in Korea. They ship it anywhere in the entire world.
I thought you were talking about Kim Jong-un or something.
Yeah.
He's running North Korea.
You can get it in North or South Korea is what I heard. That's the fucking rumor. If you're in North Korea, you can't listen to the show, but you can order Strike Force.
Clint, fucking Ross's mind is like watching a Rob Zombie horror movie where it doesn't make sense, but there's a lot of weird death.
Yeah.
So you just kind of got to go with it.
Just nod your head and smile.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Clint, you know what else you got to nod your head and smile at? Is if somebody comes through the door and they're looking to steal your TV because you got a little Tartarus Ordnance.com. Boop, 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 boop. That's Tartarusordnance. They are the leaders, TartarusOrdnance.com, and home defense ammunition. They got guns. They got ammo. They got everything you need to say, I wish a motherfucker would.
I say, come at me, bro, not come on me, bro. And that's I think, appropriate for that.
Yeah, but let's say somebody
come on me, bro. Yeah. And he's like, what?
Do you think Tartarus would actually change that? To come at me, not come on me.
No, I think it's come on me still. Okay. But like,
right. Fun fact though, Matt, if somebody does come on you and you don't want them to come on you, you can blow them away with some Tartarus ordnance.
Come on, guys. Wait, what?
Why Tartarus, dude?
A whole different demographic. You're
blow them away.
What did they say? I was gonna make a gay joke, but fuck it.
Yeah. But
oh, there it is. There it is, Matt. Go to TartarusOrdnance.com. Type in the promo code Drinking Bros. Get 10% off of every order. If you come on somebody or somebody comes on you, you can celebrate with a little cigar. Go to warfightertobacco.com. Get yourself a hand-rolled cigar. They're made with Cuban seeds, finely rolled in the Dominican Republic. Jennifer Lopez used to smoke them as a child on the block when she was Jenny on the block. If you go to warfightertobacco.com, type in the promo code Drinking Bros, you get 10% off of every order. They are 100% combat veteran owned. You can put down the fucking hookah and smoke his cigar. Fun fact, all of those guys have been in combat.
I'm starting to see a weird trend, Ross.
President Clinton smoked cigars.
It's weird that our fucking sponsors are mostly all veterans. Hashtag that is weird. Fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Hashtag you know? Awesome.
Fucking awesome.
We've got the best sponsors on the planet. Look, you know, the lead character in At Night She Cries While He Rides His Steed will oddly enough in the sequel be a veteran. You're welcome. He fights in the Civil War. Taking it back. So you can get the first one, At Night She Cries While He Rides His Steed, the first ever romance novel for dudes, on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, every.com except for Walmart.com. You can't get it there.
They Walmart.
Said it's too offensive. Yep. So fuck Walmart. Yeah. Fuck all of them. Last but not least, we got a little bit of a Black Rifle Coffee. Evan Hafer, why don't you tell us a little bit about your tasty co.
You've just been on the podcast a lot tonight.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been on it the last like three episodes or something like that.
Fucking coffee company of yours.
Oh, God, Matt. It's not stupid at all.
I drink it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So
Evan pays me in t-shirts and free coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a great deal for now. I mean, until he starts drinking more coffee, and then it might actually be a bad deal.
But or wearing less t-shirts.
If I drank coffee like I did whiskey, I'd probably put you out of business.
Yeah, that I wouldn't have cut that deal whatsoever. So, Black Rifle Coffee is so here it is, right? It's a premium roast to order coffee company. We roast the finest, freshest coffee in the United States, and we deliver it to your doorstep in the shortest amount of time.
Whoa!
So, Black Rifle Coffee. Right now, our membership is the only thing you can purchase because, well, you know what? We take care of our members. That's what we do. And so right now, you can order the Black Rifle Coffee Club membership, and you can use drinking or drinking. So you could use either one. You're still going to get the discount code.
Which is the best way because Evan has opened up my whole life to what coffee is. And I hate when I feel like I'm just supporting you because you're one of my best friends. But at the end of the day, the coffee's so legit. And when you broke down all that shit, fucking love it. Because if you buy 5 bags of coffee that lasts you 6 months, fuck that. The subscription-based thing, you actually save a fuck ton of money. And it's fresh every time. And the consistency and taste from like 3 weeks out compared, you made me a coffee snob, you fuck.
Yeah, wow. You did.
That's what I do. I
can't even drink Keurig anymore. That's my, or Keurig, whatever.
Yeah.
My favorite shit too. Cause I'm like, I'm a lazy motherfucker. Now I'm over there French pressing at 7 in the morning. Like Evan, you fuck.
Evan,
I'm
going to
convert them all.
Ross. Hey, by the way, that's a great point. Do you guys have K-cups?
We do.
Caffeinated as fuck. So
I try to
we
be
got
like,
caffeine.
Yeah, I said we.
Sorry. And Just Black. So both. We've got both K-Cups. And they are... So a little thing that a lot of people don't know about Black Rifle K-Cups is I just went to the guy that won the K-Cup International Tasting Competition a couple years in a row.
Juan Valdez.
And I was like...
Yep. Jonathan, yeah, exactly. Jonathan
Juan,
Helmsley.
Jonathan, name, Clint?
Jonathan Juan Valdez.
I'm
and
impressed.
I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. I said, dude... Just take my coffee and do it the way that you do. So that's what we did. He developed our K-Cups for us, and I would stack our K-Cups against anybody's in the nation because they are the best.
Fuck yeah, fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Well, okay, and last but not least, go to drinkingbrospodcast.com. That's Drinking Bros, exactly like the show, podcast.com. For all your sweet t-shirt needs, we got the France Press shirt from Jared. We got some Dicks Out for Harambe shirts up in that motherfucker. And then we've got your plain and simple classics, your tri-blends. Go to drinkingbrospodcast.com for all your needs. You can also get a France Press to drink like Jared or make coffee like Evan. Those are on sale now. Grab them while they're hot. In the meantime, Clint, welcome to the motherfucking show. It's an honor to have you here, sir.
It's fucking awesome to be here.
I heard a nasty little rumor that you wrote a fine piece of literature. You got a book out right now.
I do. It came out back in, what month is this? Crap, I forgot already. May 3rd it released, called Red Platoon. True story of American valor. Wrote the book over the course of about 2 years, and a lot of it came from really what tied it together and made it such a phenomenal story. Is traveled around the country and the 52 other Americans I was there with when October 3rd happened at Cop Keating, where we got overran, where I received the Medal of Honor for actions. Being able to go around the country and capture the stories of the guys I was there with and their perspective, and I think it's almost. I think you're almost 23 pages into that book before you ever get a mention of my name. which was specifically done because, you know, having the status of being a Medal of Honor recipient, you kind of get the recognition right off the bat from that. But it was those other guys that were there with me that day that, you know, doing the book, I truly felt like capturing their voice, letting their acknowledgments and their actions be recognized through, you know, the printed word and kind of immortalized that way was my way to give back to those guys for saving my ass that day.
I want to suck a fucking bald eagle's dick after that, dude.
Yeah, Jesus. Fucking A, yeah. Dude. If that was any more American, Colonel Sanders would have shot out of my dick hole.
No, hey, Ross, seriously, though, if you get to know Clint, I mean, I forget when I met you, Clint. It's been I don't know, probably a year and a half now.
Yeah.
And, dude.
Well, I mean, we're both really drunk. And,
yeah, we're always drunk. God damn it.
That's how, by the way, that starts every story with how you meet Matt. Man, okay, I was really drunk.
Really drunk.
Yeah.
But we didn't make eye contact.
Clint and I resonate in so many levels, man. We were chilling today at the house, and it was just conversation about, like, where a lot of the community is and, like, people where, and I'm speaking solely for myself at this point, but, like, where, like, I truly believe that he's been put in a position where he didn't necessarily want to be because, you know, you can't always,
you don't get to pick what you do sometimes. You're exactly. Just put in a situation. And
he took it to be the fucking a man and to support his brothers that fucking sacrifice. It's a fucking awesome story. And dude, it's a pleasure to have you here, man. I fucking love you, dude. And like, I drink whiskey with y'all. I fucking love it, dude.
Yeah. Hey,
love it.
Hey, Clint. So kind of take me back here. When you won the Medal of Honor, it was for your action.
Awarded. Get with your shit, Ross.
When you were awarded. Hey, look, I'm learning. I'm learning on the fly, and I ain't got wings.
You're not. I had to do that for the military audience because you're a recipient, not awarded.
Absolutely.
You didn't win a fucking prize, all right?
No.
you didn't grab a pack of cool cigarettes and a lottery ticket, and all of a sudden you got this.
Well, look, hey, that's a great point because to us civilians, it seems like such a high award. We think that you might have been up against like 100 other people, and then you won, they chose you. Kind of break that down for the audience of how one even gets it. I think that would be helpful.
So the way the awards process works, it actually comes, and it sounds crazy nowadays. You have to have two people that witness you do whatever you did.
Okay.
And it can be recommended from a private on the ground or your commander. The recommendation has no rank bearing on it. The other thing is those two people have to be able to read and write English. Because they have to put in a sworn statement what they saw you do.
Right.
From there, it runs up the
chain. Can I
ask
a question on that too? Is that based off like the after actions review, or is that like a statement you submit for the actual award?
It's a compilation of the after actions review and the investigation. And like for my case, actually, when everything was done, said and over with, I was initially told they were going to put me in for a DSC, Distinguished Service Cross, and. You know, it was one of those things. We still had 9 more months left in country. The concern was making sure, you know, the 8 guys we lost, they got their due. The great guys I was there with, like I said, my lieutenant, first deployment ever. He was on the scene commander that day running everything. My team leader, Larson, you know, just worrying about their awards first. And I got out of the Army never even knowing anything. Transitioned out. Heard rumors that, yeah, there's going to be a DSC, maybe, whatever. And it wasn't until I got this random phone call out in the oil fields one day, which was hilarious. Answer the phone from this number that was out of Washington, D.C., which I'll probably never do again.
Perfect.
And as soon as, you know, I pick up the phone, and it's this colonel on the other end of the line. And he asked me to identify myself. I do. The first thing I'm thinking is, what are the statute of limitations for anything I've ever done? I'm in so much fucking trouble.
I'm fucked.
Yeah. Fuck. I've been out for almost a year now. They caught me finally. And, you know, they basically told me, hey, look, you need to come to D.C. We got something to tell you. We can't tell you over the phone. And I told them, I was like, look, I don't have enough vacation days saved up yet. So I'll get there when I can. And I hung up on them.
No fuck way.
Yeah. I fucking love this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's. Not every day you get to hang up on a colonel and not get fucking called in the commander's office. And so it was like 2 weeks later. And, you know, the only thing I can think of, I called up my old lieutenant. I called up my old commander. They didn't hear anything and, you know, kind of thought it's like, all right, I'm just going to go to the Pentagon real quick. They'll hand me a DSC, shake my hand. I'll be on my way. Life will be back to what it was. And they flew me out to D.C. I show up. I got a full bird colonel, full uniform dress waiting there for me which was awesome because I took my time getting off the plane and I smoked a cigarette and made him wait even longer.
Fuck you. Dude, enlisted to the bone, Clint. Yeah. I fucking love it. Yeah. I fucking love it.
You know, and we strolled to the Pentagon and I'm like, all right, cool. Never been in this building. Never want to be in this building. And like we blow past security and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like I'm still dragging my carry-on bag and the security guy takes it. Oh, we got this. And all of a sudden you got all these colonels and generals just fawning over you like, oh, appreciate Clint? It. Thank you. So oh, Clint, thank you. Clint Romisha. Oh, it's obviously you don't know me, sir. You mispronounced my name, you jackass. And
that's me.
Romishi?
Romishi?
How do you say that?
Kubidaha?
Who? Clint. And so, of course, you know, the army being the army, we go into this big room, huge conference table. They've got a PowerPoint slide already freaking up on the board. God. Gotta love it. And I sit down at the head of the table and they just start yakking and I'm like Charlie Brown in a freaking class. I'm not hearing shit. And I look down and there's three posters in front of me, and one's Sal Junta, the first living recipient of the medal from Afghanistan. The next one's Leroy Petrie.
Shout out to Leroy. Fucking amazing dude.
Hey, Leroy, clap.
Oh shit, you got a bionic arm.
And one was a Sergeant Sabo, a Vietnam posthumous. And it's all, you know, Medal of Honor, Medal of Honor, Medal of Honor. And I'm sitting there and I don't know if I was staring at those pictures for 5 seconds or 20 minutes. And I finally kind of look up and I called the time out and I'm like, hey guys, what the fuck is this? And of course, gotta love the officer corps. One of the colonels looks over at me. He's like, you don't know Sergeant Romishi? I look at him. I'm like, I wouldn't ask the question if I fucking knew, sir. And another one chimes in that says, well, you know, you're going to be receiving the Medal of Honor. And I say, for what? I was like, I got put in for a DSC, so that doesn't add up. And they're like, well, you've been recommended for upgrade, and short of the president signing the award, you will be receiving the Medal of Honor. And I kind of looked at it again, and it's like, for fucking what? I was like, I did the exact same job that I know deep down in my heart any other soldier would have done that day. There was 8 guys that never came home.
I
they gave
wouldn't
up.
Say any other soldier, well, okay, but yes, yeah, a lot of motherfuckers.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it just, you know, it goes back to timing. You know, you don't get to pick and choose, but it's one of those moments where, you know what, we know deep down inside what right is, and when action needs to take. And I thought it was just stupid. It's like, who the hell would think about, hey, let's lead a counterattack when we're getting overran by 300 guys? That's fucking stupid. But it worked out.
Right. I will say this, man. I think going forward, and a lot of, you know, the guys have been in the community for a while, like Evan and me for a little bit. I think what a judgment of character is, and I think maybe you can attest to this, Evan, is not necessarily of like defining your life by one day. And I think a lot of people tend to do that. They go, hey, man, I got this. I won this. I got the Bronze Star, whatever the case is. But it's like, prove your actions going forward and using that as like almost like a foundation and a basis to continue to do good things.
Thanks, yeah.
And that's why I have such a fucking an amount of reverence for you, because you consistently try to do the right thing. And like, you're not going to be fucking perfect, dude. None of us are. I fuck up every single day. But like, you're always out there like, hey, this did this for me. How can I use this to fucking help my bros who are making $9 an hour at this fucking job? Like, let's get you out from your fucking crazy life to go hunt and all this shit we talked about saying. It's fucking rad, man. And I think there needs to be more leaders in the community like you. So
right.
I hope you know that we all value and all that, aside from all the other craziness. Because Ross, I don't think you know, and we spoke with a lot of MOH guys. Like, it's almost, it's a blessing and a burden. Like, you literally overnight say, be this person. Yeah. Right. And people judge the fuck out of you, dude.
Yeah, and I guess
a Medal of Honor recipient shouldn't have a fucking beard. And you're like, what?
What?
Like, what? I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah. Wear this thing the entire way up into the
that
ceremony.
That mustache is glorious.
So Clint, but that takes me back to your book. What year did you receive the award? For, you know, what year was that?
I received it in February of 2013 for actions on October 3rd, 2009. So there is, you know, a little lag in there between. You know, it's not like it happens overnight.
No, absolutely. But I'm curious as to what made you want to tell the story now. Was it hard to go back and look at on that time?
You know,
or did you feel like now is the right time to tell your story?
You know, it actually came from a lot of the guys I served with and the families of the guys we lost, because all they really had to hold on to of the story was the redaction of the 15-6. Yep. Jake Tapper had done the book The Outpost, but it was you know, a third person perspective of doing it. You know, he covered a lot of great history of the outpost, you know, did a very good job of that. But, you know, as veterans, I think if we don't tell our story, someone else is going to do it. And when they do it, they might
potentially misrepresent that.
Absolutely. And like I said, it was from the guys that said, hey, look, you know, you've got an opportunity. You should write a book, tell our stories. And I said, well, if I'm going to do it, you guys are going to participate. And because of their participation is, you know, really what kicked
that's
it off.
That's amazing. You didn't just say, I'm writing a book. You went around, interviewed the soldiers, the family, the whole nine.
Well, that's because the publisher wouldn't let me just do a coloring book, so we had to have context in it.
That was that was Clint's original put. I wanted a color book. Well, I wanted to pop out things.
I wanted a coloring book, or I wanted to choose your own adventure. Yeah. I thought that would be pretty sweet. It's like, oh, no,
That's your book, Evan. You make a fucking color book. It'd choose be your clowns own adventure. In action.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I want to write, but... Yeah, I will second what Matt said, which is, you know, we've talked to, gosh, I don't know how many guys over the past couple of years, at least. I'm not lumping you and me in the same category, but as far as humility and what you've done, what you've accomplished, and the people that, you know, I've come into contact. One of the biggest things I respect about Clint is, like, you would never know. Like, you would absolutely never know. You have to pull it out of him. Like, hey, what exactly did you do? So, and I'm not saying that everybody is like that, but you'll definitely know, like, the guys that have maybe done some weird award, and they're like, hey, I've got the Archom, and with I'm feet. Badass, dude.
You're like me when I just throw it out there. I'm going for you.
But that's one of the things that struck me about Clint, first of all, which was, like, he is absolutely one of the most humble people. And so when he says, no, this is a good book, I'm going to listen. I really am. I'm going to listen. I'm going to say, okay, roger that, dude. You're telling me, so I'm going to listen. So just being around you, even for, you know, what we had, Range 15, and then the Range 15 premiere, and then now here, he's just a regular
that's
dude.
The fucking oh yeah, it's a regular fuck dude. Yeah. Like, if you weren't, I would fucking probably talk shit. But
yeah, absolutely,
dude. The fact that, like, someone in your position that gets judged so much just jumped on Range 15 of how aggressive that script was right. Fucking awesome, dude. Like, anyways, I guess we're talking
enlisted,
more like, we're talking friends in the inner circle
enlisted
right now.
Enlisted to the bone, yeah, like you just said, like he is
bone.
Fucking enlisted
like I said,
to the
that was
bone,
one of the greatest.
Bro.
Phone calls I got from JT. It's like, hey, you want to be in this movie? It's like, yep, all right, cool. It's like, oh, fuck, negotiations really? Over.
Yeah, that's it. That's all we need. Jared. Yeah. We miss him. Yeah.
That's always Jared, by the way.
He's the man.
Yeah. And you, by the way, you and Leroy, everybody loves in the movie. Like, that, that's what we hear the most of. It's I can't believe those guys did that movie.
I think we need to blow an extremity off of, not blow him, but blow an extremity off right, of Clint. Because right. Leroy Ross's other hand.
No, so, you know what's funny? I think in the sequel, like, Leroy should just start losing legs. So, like, every movie he keeps losing something. Clint is totally fine, and he's just like, oh, see, God. Leroy,
it's like
can
a
you
Monty
get your
Python
shit together?
Movie. Yeah. It's like a Monty Python movie.
I don't know if you know the extent of, Leroy was not in my company, but he went to Deco. And one of my best friends, I won't say his last name, Daniel, went over for my squad. He grew up in San Luis Obispo, and I'm from Santa Barbara. So when he first came to fucking Alpha, First Platoon, I was like, oh, shit, dude, we hit it off. And we did, I think, two deployments together. And then that last one, he went to Deco with Leroy. Well, Leroy got the MOH for saving Daniel's life. And Gather Cole, who was also, we went out partying like the day before he left, but... It's always that weird mixture in this community. And even Evan and I, we were telling the story today, and we resonated. I was like, holy fuck, you know this dude? Like, you worked in the office with him. I worked in the office with him. So it's kind of cool to see how small the community is and to see all these guys doing fucking awesome things, man. It motivates me to be better than my drunk shit show self every day. So
that's absolutely not
true.
Yeah,
and
he's
and Clint,
he is not a drunk shit show. I will attest to that. He is not. Now, right now, maybe he's working on it, but not all the time.
I got a flight at 5 a.m, so that's gonna be a little brutal.
yeah, that's in the morning now.
Yeah, fuck it, I'll miss it. You know,
hey, so
easy to change.
Clint, what's one thing you're hoping that people take away after reading your book?
He's got a nice dick. What?
What? Okay. Yeah.
There's a dick pic.
There's a dick pic in the somewhere in the book. There's a dick pic.
Is it really?
No. No. Well, I mean, yeah. You got to go buy it to find out, though.
That'd be a sweet Easter egg of like, wow, find Clint's dick in the
oh,
book.
Oh shit.
That sounds like our book, Ross. We won't talk about that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
You know, but to answer your question, I mean, it's I really hope, like I said, writing the book with the perspective of the guys and trying to do it in such a way that most people that haven't served can pick it up and they're not flipping back and forth between acronym pages all freaking day. They can read it and at least get some sort of sliver of, you know, the average American that serves. We come from all different walks of life, all different races, religions, creeds, and we all go put on the same uniform and we all go put, you know, our freedom on the line to serve for others. And it's that brotherly love, that camaraderie that you just don't see unless you do that. And hopefully that'll come across to know what true sacrifice to keep this country free is.
Dude, okay. You just hit on such a... It gave me fucking chills. Yeah. I literally have chills.
Oh, look, you got goose pimples.
Yep, I do. So it's such a good point you just made. And I think that's why, like, a lot of us that have deployed and done these things, like, we don't fall into these, like, social constructs of racism and prejudice because we don't fucking care. I can say, like... Shut up, you're black. Shut up, whitey. Like, it doesn't, like, that's all faced value. But at the end of the day, I know when we're fucking getting ambushed, where I don't care if you're Mexican, black, white, fucking Puerto Rican, you're fucking a Christian, you're a fucking Jew. It does not matter to me. I got your back, you got mine.
Yep.
And it's such a hard concept for a lot of people in, like, contemporary American society to wrap their brains around where, like, they want to, they say racism shouldn't exist. We watch that fucking Black Eyed Peas thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
Fucking literally. Fucking influencing racism, but then saying we should all love each other. But this part of society is wrong. You're like, dude, none of that fucking matters. Let's just all come to a common goal. We all have different opinions. We all have different preferences. But, like, what's the big goal? Not dying in a fucking firefight and killing a motherfucker that wants to create humanitarian fucking issues and murder kids and rape kids. We can all get on board on that. It's like, for us, I think maybe level thinkers, it's a pretty easy concept, but, like, fuck, man.
It's very straightforward if you just break it down to the bare necessities of it. And that's something I think a lot of the American public doesn't understand, that, you know, veterans kind of get labeled with certain things they do. You know, we're pretty aggressive in just our manner coming back. But I don't think they truly understand that. It's like, we don't go over there because we hate. I mean, you know, you can kind of get a little hatred for those yahoos and the shit they do, but
when push them a little bit,
but when push comes to shove, when the bullets are flying, you're not running out to go, you know, save your buddy because you want to go kill that yahoo shooting at you. You're going out because you love that motherfucker so much. You know that it's going to be perpetuated and come back to you.
That was a funny concept we talked about earlier. Not even concept, but actually, like, reality is, like, when people are like, oh, you're just willing to go over there and murder people. Like, morality is found on an individual level, right? And your actions are based off of, like, I believe what is right and wrong. You go in the whole religious thing of, like, a true gift, all these crazy things. But I'm saying morality. Like, I don't believe that murdering someone in cold blood is correct, right?
Right.
Pretty much everybody believes that.
Yeah.
But then the people that are judging are the same people that are voting for a fucking politician or whatever, and I'm not gonna make this political a little bit, but
please, influencing
the decisions that make us go fucking deploy. So it's like, if you're a patriot and believe in America, absolutely I'm deploy from the greater social vote in America. Let's go do this, and then I'm gonna act on individual, like, morality. So, like, it's hard to, like, when you And life is not perfect. It's the same thing with law enforcement, where they're like, you shot this dude, throw someone in a fucking in a setting where they have to react in a second notice to either save their friend, save their life, or kill somebody.
Right.
Make that decision. You can't. They're not. It's a brutal fucking world, man. And for people to sit on a pedestal and judge, please, Evan.
I'll back that up, which is, and not only back it up, but I think we have to go all the way back to the fact that a lot of people, or most people in the United States, think that military guys, they have this, like, recollection of the guy they went to high school with, right?
Right.
He or she is not the same individual. They are not. They go through 8, 12, 16, however many weeks of reforging. They've reformatted DNA at that point. So whoever you knew back in high school, that is not the same guy that is deployed downrange. That is absolutely a different person. They don't understand that jackass that was drinking beers and fucking crashing cars and getting in fistfights in high school is... That jackassery is directly translated.
It's a refined jackassery.
It's an absolutely refined jackassery. And those guys, you know, we were those guys. Like, and I'll back that up to myself, which was, I was that guy. I had, I don't know, 20 some different fights in high school. I was a fuck up. the military, what it did was it reforged DNA and refined my energy to a specific point. And it's not hatred, which was, I loved the Army. I loved the Army. And when I say love, I still do. And so when I came out of that experience at, 18 and a half years, I was a different individual. And I think a lot of people don't understand the context in which those people have reformatted their DNA, they've deployed overseas, they love their country, but more importantly, the guy to their left and right, they became my family.
Yeah.
But see, and that's the hard point that gets across, right? There's a social construct where it says that, like, I know what a military guy is.
Right.
It's that fucking, dress, which is like, when you, the more and more you fucking envelop yourself in the military and community, it's not that way, dude. Dudes that are writing emo songs, creating fucking paintings and all this shit. They're normal people. It's a niche part of society that just exists in like a separate demographic. They're the same as everybody else, but they serve their country. And it sucks that that's what we're painted these days.
Yeah.
And I think that it's, I hate to say that conscription would be needed in order to cross-pollinate that experience to a point where it would be beneficial to society. But ultimately...
Yeah.
Dinner's done.
Dinner's done. Ultimately, that's what it would take. I mean, it's a volunteer force, right? So guys that are standing up and raising their hand and taking a commitment to the Constitution at 18 years old, you might not understand exactly what that means, but I'll tell you what. After your first deployment to Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever fucking shithole you deploy to, you know exactly what that means.
Right.
And you know exactly what the forfeiture of liberty and freedom, what that takes in order to put this thing, this big machine.
It breaks you out
machine.
Of that fucking thinking where you're like, life is great. Listen, and it's a fucked up mentality and a macabre sense of fucking outlook. But at the end of the day, humanity is pretty disgusting. I talk about it all the time. When you see... free humanity, it is a dark, disgusting power. Like, everybody wants to be powerful, and it's just like, I think when you share those experiences with your brothers and that, like, you find a sense of like humility and a sense of purpose where you're like, I never want, if I have kids, to be in that position. I never want my family to be in that position. I don't want, my wife to be in that position. I'm gonna be like, I just want to exist and live a happy life. So I think it gives purpose. I think a lot of people won't understand that. Does that make sense to you at all, Ross?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're getting all philosophical over here. Manly Evan with that fucking...
Sorry, guys.
No, but it's like, look, you have a guy like Clint on the show, and you want to ask these questions. You want to talk about these type of topics. That award in particular holds so much weight to so many people that it's like, once you start talking about this, you really want to get going. Like, look, there's 1,000 questions I want to ask. I don't know how much time you have here, Clint. But
Thursday.
Okay, perfect.
Best answer
Let's
ever.
Do it.
Thursday. In the book, I'd love to know something about what Matt touched on earlier. Is it a burden, kind of, to carry this around with you? Like, is there so many expectations placed on you and the award that going through your day to day life, it's kind of hard and worrisome at all?
I mean, it's a blessing and a burden all in the same thing. And you're basically overnight turned into, you're put on a pedestal because everyone thinks you're, a hero. And, my personal belief is I never look at myself as a hero. My definition of heroes are those that don't come home. And so to hear people call you that, it's like, no, I was a warrior. I was a soldier. That's what I was. The actions that day, I've only had I've been wearing the medal since 2013. When I look back, what I did that day was easier than what I do every day wearing it. The burden.
Boom. That's fucking
wow. Yeah.
The burden of, 8 guys that didn't come home. I'd trade any accolades, any attention, anything possible to have one more beer with any one of those guys. But that's not possible. That's the reality of it. But to now be able to share their story, to make sure they're immortalized, never forgotten, because that's the biggest tragedy in the world, is when our heroes are forgotten.
But I think, and ultimately, like we talked about that earlier, like Ross, so the MOH, like from I have no understanding because I've never even come close to that kind of sacrifice, but like you're in a good position, but it's hard because you come overnight and it's the whole like societal thing we're talking about. It's like fucking Susie Homemaker that makes cookies that's 60 years old thinks a Medal of Honor recipient should be fucking, looking like goddamn, I don't know, Captain America. And it's like, it's hard for people to identify and then be like, well, why is he drinking whiskey saying fuck?
Yeah. And that's, you know? And that's what right. I think a lot of people don't understand. It's not a lifetime achievement award. It's not a popularity contest. No. It's for a specific
You had the worst day of your life and you were fucking valorous. You were a fucking man and you did your best to save your friends, which is like, obviously one of the legendary. I mean, that's why it's fucking awesome. But then, I can't imagine, man. And I guess what the point I'm making is it's like it could be really hard, but then again, what I was talking about earlier, like you've taken that opportunity to be like, how can I use where I'm at in life to remember the dudes that like the other guys that didn't fucking make it home? Yeah. How about I use my fucking celebrity status to, hey, this is their story. This is their family. This is what they died. Hey, Ryan or whoever, he hated fucking veggie MREs. Like, that's fun. Those are fun right. facts that like should be in the book and like people love about that, man.
You know, and it... You know, it really kind of goes back to what we were talking earlier today with veterans and some of the things you see are going on. You know, for me, receiving the medal is not my defining moment in life. My defining moment will be, one, what my kids do when they grow up. And I think we kind of get stuck as veterans in these little ruts of, this is what I am now. This is what I have to resort back to. And no, we got to keep pushing forward. We got to take that next step. We got to improve ourselves or those around us, or if not, we're going to be that silent majority that's going to continue to get ignored. And that's what I hope to do without, you know, drinking too much whiskey and getting arrested every other weekend.
Yeah, no, from our standpoint, it's humbling to have you on the show. I mean, if you look at Jared, you know, his hardest moment in life was when McDonald's wasn't serving breakfast all day. So,
goddamn Jimmy Jones.
Jimmy Jones. Rebel.
So let me ask you this, Clint. Out of all the people you've gotten to meet, who's the coolest person you got to meet as a benefit of having the award?
I had a mustache contest with Tom Selleck.
No way.
Did you really?
I dominated him.
Yeah, your mustache is legendary, bro.
Did he say so? Did he legendary. Give you a shout out?
Well, no, he defended himself with saying, well, I'm still filming Blue Blood, so I have to keep it within copy regulations. And I said, whatever, Quigley. But no, super, super cool guy, though. I mean, he was pretty epic. I mean, the other things, I think the next most memorable, really the most memorable experiences is two of my team leaders and one of my lieutenant. They're all from Minnesota, huge hockey fans, huge Minnesota Wild fans. And I had the opportunity to take them to a Minnesota Wild game and meet the team and to be able to see the looks on their faces, to be able to experience something like that. Now that I had the ability to kind of share that back with them, that was just so fucking rad. I mean, just to see them be little schoolgirls around some of those hockey players and being from Minnesota, that makes it worth it. Absolutely.
It's fucking rad.
That's really great. And your friends in real life, just tell everybody at home, you're really good friends with Leroy, correct?
Yes. Yep. Good. Me and Leroy, we were just together down in Florida here a couple of weeks ago with one of the nonprofits we support.
You got to love Leroy.
Reroy.
Whiskey's kicking in.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. Welcome to Drinking Bros, Matthew. Yeah.
You know, I just mispronouncing fucking M-O-H fucking
yeah,
name.
Yeah, old Reroy,
you know?
Dude. You just Reroy. You pronounce him like an eight-year-old Asian. An eight-year-old Asian. Yeah. Hi, Reroy.
Hello.
Let me ask Leroy's you this. I got one more question for you, Clint. I've heard there is a rivalry among some of the MOH guys. Is that true?
A rivalry?
Well, it's more of like a dick measuring competition. It's like not like metaphorically, literally.
Literally.
Yeah. Which sucks because Clint's dick is way bigger than mine.
Oh, no, that's you don't know. I pull my measurement from my belly button every time.
No, but we were comparing them tip to tip. We were docking.
Oh, we were jousting earlier,
What?
Yeah, but I heard the MOH guys like to say who's braver. We had that in the script at one point in Range 15. Do you guys sit around and talk about that? Because that was the rumor going around.
You know what's really actually funny is when, you know, the recipients get together at least once a year for a big convention and stuff. And the first time I went to the convention in 2013, you know, I was just at awe that I was in the same room with 50 other Medal of Honor recipients. I don't think there was one war story told that entire 5 days we were together. We talked about our families. We talked about stuff we were doing in life. And that was, you know, I was scared shitless because said, never in a million years that I think I'd meet a recipient, let alone be one. And the one chance I did have of meeting a recipient, me and my buddies got drunk at the squadron ball. The commander kicked us out.
Dude, it's funny you say that. So Ross and I are working on a book project, and that's like in the opening chapter where it's like when you meet the baddest motherfuckers on the planet, at least in my experience, like dudes that I'm like, God damn, that guy's amazing. They don't tell war stories. They're like, how are your kids, bro? Yep. Oh, fish might be a little overcooked. You want a Coors Light? And you're like, I would never fuck with that dude. He would fuck me up twice, then fuck my wife, then kill me again. So, yeah, I think that's a testament to humility, and it goes back to the whole thing. So that's awesome, man. I'm just happy to have you in the fucking show. We should talk about whiskey now, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Lighten this motherfucker up, dude.
Let's lighten it up.
Know?
Speaking of whiskey.
Wait, where can everybody get the book, by the way? Clint, where can everybody get a copy of the book?
It's available on Amazon. Barnes & Noble carries it. I think Costco carries it.
And what's the name of the book?
The name of the book is Red Platoon, A True Story of American Valor, unless you're buying it in the UK, and then they got some weird title on it. But I prefer the audio version, and I recommend that for all the Marine listeners out there. The audio version is ready to go.
There it is.
Do you do it? Do you do the audio version? Is it you?
Well, I do parts of it. And then there's those four-syllable words that just fuck me up, so.
The, because, I mean, that, yeah.
Worst 3 days of my life was doing that, the audio. I did, like, the prologue, the notes, and literally the director would say, just read it like you would normally. Well, I apparently, when I see contraction words, I say the whole thing. Like, instead of can't, I say cannot when I read it. And even though I know you're listening to the audiobook and you're not following along because we don't have the tape for Teddy Ruxpin for you to do this on.
Right.
Oh yeah. Every time I'd say cannot, it'd be like, oh, hold on, stop. We need to go back.
Oh, you'd say can't.
What? I gotta say can't.
And yeah.
I have an accent, and I did not realize that I say especially incorrectly.
Especially. Instead of especially.
Yep.
Because doing an audiobook is harder than people think it is. It's about 8 hours a day. If you're doing the full book, it's about 8 hours a day for about 6 to 7 days. And they stop you if you miss one word. It's
and you restart from the get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ross, I told you that when we did the ADR, which is like the voiceovers for Range 15, that was the hardest like experience for me as, I don't want to say an actor, but like doing that. That was fucking brutal, because acting, I'm like, I'll just fucking yell during the camera, whatever. But ADR, trying to match those lines with your voice and then recreate that, fuck, bro. Yeah. I was sucking in the booth. I was like, don't go over there. It's like, Ross is like, yeah. So I need you to say don't go there. I'm like, don't go there. Fucking horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, imagine reading the words to the book that you wrote and then listening to somebody else telling you you're reading it wrong. You literally just want to go fuck yourself, dude.
Clint, you said
that wrong. And the guy was doing it on Skype, too, and we didn't have the best connection.
Oh, shit.
So, of course, then you get the lag, and he thinks, yeah, that was the one time in my life where I'm like, oh, man, I'd rather be on a road march right now with no shoes on.
Never.
I'd rather take a glass tube and shove it up my pee hole and then douse fucking Tabasco sauce down it.
Dude, can you imagine?
So it was pretty bad.
Imagine if someone stuck like a glass test tube in your urethra, then hammered your dick on the tip
and snapped
it inside?
It?
And then you had a piss. God, that would be bad.
Or a fiberglass rod where it fucking.
Oh, man. That's bad. That's bad.
Wow.
God damn. So, that would be awful. Hey, way to end the show, though. So, you ended it strong. Yeah. It was a real strong ending.
We thought we'd escalate it quickly.
Carl did just stop in and say hi. He did just come in and say hi, get a little quick pats on the head, and then roll out.
We should make this an hour episode just because we got one episode with Mr. Clint, you know, extended a little bit. We should have little drunk times, you know.
Yeah, let's push it out.
I've got a good buzz on. I got to get up in 5 hours for a fucking flight.
5 hours.
Let's make it weird, you
know? Yeah, why not?
Let's do
why
this.
Not? Clint, what's the most fucked up you've ever gotten in your entire life?
Oh, man, that was actually probably only a couple of weeks ago.
Glenlivet 25.
Yeah, it was.
I know it.
I was drinking an entire bottle of Glenlivet 25, which is probably the most
Glenlivet
expensive.
Glenlivet will take you down every time, though.
Yeah, but it's 25,
yeah,
which
it's
$1,000 bottle.
That's
and then I was taking pulls from Louis XIII, and then we went to the Tim McGraw concert, which I was drinking Bud Lights.
And then I had 6 hours of unaccountable time.
I know exactly. I know exactly when that was. Actually, I'm going to say NRA convention.
No, this was for the football Hall of Fame.
Golly.
This is my nephew's preschool gathering. It was his first day at school.
Day of school.
Well, the last time, and I should have learned, because the last time I got messed up on scotch was Easter, or the day before Easter 2 years ago. My buddy had just had a baby, and so we had a big baby shower for him, because, you know, the guys always get fucked over when it comes for girly shit like that. And so I had a bottle of scotch I brought over there, and then I had to go on a trip. And so I didn't actually get to celebrate it with him, but I came back, went out there for the weekend to see how he was. And it was, fucking Saturday before Easter Sunday. And we polished that fucking bottle off, plus about a half a case of beer. And I remember waking up on his couch with my phone just blowing up from my wife that was wondering if Dad was going to come home for Easter Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning.
No.
Oh, yeah, that was, fuck you, scotch. You're so delicious, though.
Fuck you, scotch.
Scotch is a hard one. Scotch is a real hard one. What about you, Evan Hafer? What's the drunkest you've ever been?
Ooh, that's pretty easy. It was 1997. It was a
so specific.
1997. It was a tequila sunrise evening at some estranged bar in Moscow, Idaho. I don't know. I would imagine I drank probably a gallon of those, and I woke up in a garbage can, not a dumpster, but a garbage can, and. A dumpster would have been an upgrade, but the garbage can was exactly where I woke up at roughly sunrise, and this was probably June, and I woke up at sunrise in a garbage can, and I woke up, shook myself off, and walked down and grabbed a cup of coffee. That's exactly what I did in those clothes, and I don't remember 8 hours. Absolutely fucking 8 hours.
And you're like, no one needs to know the story. But then you told the story.
No, nobody knows that story except for you guys.
Well, really?
And Drinking Bros now. Evidently, I don't know, 30,000 people.
Look, Evan, I really like it. Matt, I dare to even ask you. I really dare to even ask this question. Because there's no way you have your number one, do you?
I don't know if I have a number one, man. I'm a, I'm a drinker. I get down. Right. I will say the weirdest one probably that just came to me. I don't know if I told this on Drinking Bros, but I literally got fucked up. I forgot the whole night. I woke up at about 4 in the morning with a beautiful, big-titted Asian girl slapping me, aggressive, like hitting me in the face, like domestic violence hitting me in the face, waking me up, says, wake up. And I go, hi. And she goes, finally you're awake. Are you going to fuck me? And I was like, well, I don't. What? And the last thing I remember was about 10 p.m., so... That was an interesting one. The fact that you could go through that experience and not remember any of it.
Yeah, look, if you get beaten by a female, that's a big one. That's a real big one.
She was teeing off. I mean, she was,
Chris Browning.
Getting the hips and everything.
She was
Tiger
Woods' wife on the car there with the baseball bat on my face with her hands. Wow. So that's a weird analogy, but yeah.
So is that also the same moment you had the most, just hardest erection in your life too?
Yeah, I'm not really. I'm a dominant one, so not really. But it happened, and then I'm a mellow guy these days. You know, I'm a whiskey drinker. I stay at home and do my thing, Ross.
I know you do. I know you do. You're an upstanding citizen now, Matthew, and we're proud of you for that.
I don't know. Let's not go that far. Oh, yeah.
We were talking about our drunkest stories.
Yeah, what's yours? I want to hear yours.
Mine was right before I went to college. I was in high school. There was a challenge to drink an entire bottle of Jack Daniels. That did go down, and then we ran buck naked around the security. There was a security in front of my friend's neighborhood. They called the police. We scattered.
Fucking frat boys.
Well, no. I wasn't a fraternity. I was in high school. So they called the police. We scattered, but we were in a car, and we couldn't get back to our car. The police surrounded the vehicle. So we had to walk 6.5 miles buck naked. Through neighborhoods, woods, streets, all the way back to someone's house, no covering whatsoever. And that was that. That's the longest. I want to say that
you were free.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, the longest.
You were like Harambe, dude. You were free.
It was like naked and afraid. That was the longest, probably 5.5 hours of being nude in my entire life.
We should invite someone weird on the podcast where they're like, what's your weird drunk story? Like, oh man, this one time I got so fucked up, dude. I woke up, there was 9 dicks in my mouth. And I was like, I'm not gay, but I sucked them.
Like, yeah.
What?
I didn't make eye contact.
What? Say that again? That's when you need Jared, because that's where Jared would go. Jared's or like, he would love the babysitter. He'd be like, I just fell in love. I cuddled her. She wanted to fuck.
But it was a tornado. It was a fucking tornado, bro. Like, she's my sister. Fuck it.
Oh, boy. Evan, that wow. tornado episode, right? By the way, because I named that episode. You know that, by the way.
Right.
Scared sister gets fucked by brother in tornado.
Exactly.
Dude, that was aggressive.
The comments we've gotten from that are just...
over
holy
the top
shit.
Yeah. You're welcome for Jared's service.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Boy, that we have an MOH guy, and then we have Jared. So
not to be confused with the pedophile from Subway.
No. Both have an affinity for sandwiches, but that's it.
Well, shit, man. I want to say, Evan, you've been covering down, dude. Rocco and JT now have been busy, brother. So thanks for that. And then
they're busy.
Clint, fucking honor for you to be on the podcast, dude. Thank you so much.
No, thank you guys so much for letting me come here and bullshit some. And fucking...
Dude, you came a lot.
A lot.
Well, it's because we locked eyes.
We did. Your beard, your mustache is glorious. You
beautiful.
Know?
hey, well, go buy Clint's book everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. He's an amazing man, and we're lucky to have him on the show. With that, we're going to get to the Drinking Bro of the Week.
Yes. Yes.
The Drinking Bro of the Week is, I just got back from Columbus, Ohio. There was a Drinking Bro named Richard Denoff, who not only bought shots for the entire screening of Range 15, but he was a wonderful host and had us all at his tailgate the following morning with his wife. And cooked bacon, egg, sausage for us. One of the most gracious hosts in a city that I didn't know we had any Drinking Bros. So to Richard Denoff, thank you for having us. Thank you for hosting us at your tailgate.
And Richard, Ross called me the morning after, not the morning after pill, but he called me the morning after and said, he told me that story about you. So cheers to you, brother.
Yeah, man. So thank you. The Drinking Bros community is only growing. It's getting stronger and stronger every day. And they're all over the nation. And it was a real pleasure to meet you. And thanks for having us. I really appreciate it. And for Clint, the hero.
throwing you on the bus.
Hero.
Back that thing
you're
up.
You're the most famous person we've ever had on the show, Clint. We appreciate you being on. For Clint, Matt, Evan, and Ross, we are out of here. Good night, everybody.
Freedom
go buy Clint's book. It'll change your life.
Go Army, beat Navy.
Free Willy. Free Willy.